So we began talking about the four Rishuyos. There's Rishus HaRavim, Rishus HaYochid, Carmelis, and Amokum Patur. Let's talk about Amokum Patur, which you'll see here on this list on as number Dalid.
Mm-hmm.
And he says the following. Amokum Patur is at least three Tfachim high. We'll discuss exactly why that's so. And once it is three Tfachim high, then it goes all the way to the Rakia, all the way to the, you know, to the heavens, so to speak. Okay, now the question is it wide? So the answer is it's less than four Tfachim wide. If it's wider than that, it might be a Carmelis, but it's a very narrow area, and it has to be four Tfachim wide on both the length and the width. So for example, let's say the length is four Tfachim, and the width is four Tfachim, but a little bit less by Sa'ora. I mean, that's the way the Gemara expresses, you know, it's a very, like a hair's breadth, we would say. Then it's enough to make it into a Makom Patur, because it doesn't have 4x4. Once it's 4x4, then it's no longer Makom Patur. But here we have 4 Tfachim in length, but a little bit less than 4 Tfachim in its width, and it's above 3 Tfachim in its height. So from there all the way up to Rakia, it's called a Makom Patur. It's neither a Shus HaRabim nor a Shus HaYochid, nor is it a Carmelis. A Carmelis is a place that really is like a Rishus HaRabim. It's a gigantic open area, and it has certainly more than 4 Tfachim by 4 Tfachim. It's above 3 Tfachim in height, but it's like a Rishus HaRabim, but it's not exactly Rishus HaRabim, because Ein HaRabim Mitzuyim Shom, the Rabim don't go into that place. So that's where the Rabbanan said, we'll consider it like a Carmel. So you're not allowed to carry from there into Rishus HaYochid or into Rishus HaRabim. Now the main thing that we have to understand is that a Rishus HaYochid has mechitzos that go up to 10 tfachim. It has a width of 4 al 4, 4 tfachim wide, 4 tfachim long. But its height is at least 10 tfachim. And that covers it on three sides. So these mechitzos, in order to qualify as mechitzos, to set up a Rishus HaYochid, have to be 10 Tfachim high. In the case of Rishus HaRabim, on the other hand, the Rishus HaRabim goes up to 10 Tfachim and not beyond 10 Tfachim. So Rishus HaRabim goes from 3 Tfachim in height all the way up to 9.9 Tfachim in height, less than 10 Tfachim in height. Once it's above Rishus HaRabim by 10 Tfachim, it becomes a Makom Patur. So the airspace above 10 Tfachim over Rishus HaRabim is called a Makom Patur. In contrast, the airspace above Rishus HaYochid is called Rishus HaYochid, all the way up to the Rakia. And a Makom Patur, likewise, goes all the way up to Rakia. So that if a person takes an object from Rishus HaYochid to Rishus HaRabim, or he takes it from Rishus HaRabim into Rishus HaYochid, if he does it with Mezid, he's Chayv Skila. If he does it with Hasra, and if he does it B'Shogeg, then he's Chayv Achatos. And the Mishnah later on, in the 7th Perek of Shabbos, is going to list 39 Malachos, all of which generate a Chiyuv Chatos B'Shogeg, and a Chiyuv Skila B'Mezid. Now, if you carry from any of these two Rishuyos, which is a Rav or Rishus HaYochid, into a Carmelis, or the reverse, from a Carmelis into one of these two Yerushuyos, then you have Malkus, which is called Makis Mardus. If he did it B'mezid, if he did it B'shogeg, he's not chayv anything. A shogeg on a Drabonon does not generate any punishment whatsoever, or any need for kapara. Now, on a Doraisa level, this Rishus is called a Makom Patur. Why? Because a Carmelis is a Makom Patur. So if you take something from Rishus HaRabim into a Carmelis, or vice versa, or from Rishus HaYochid into a Carmelis, or vice versa, then you are taking it into what on a Doraisa level would be a Makom Patur. But the Rabbanan are going to consider it as if it were both Rishus HaRabim and Rishus HaYochid. and therefore you're going to be chayv malchus for taking it from a karmelist into Rishus HaYochid or into Rishus HaRab. Now, where is the source? This is very, very important. Where is the source for the Iser Hotzah and the Iser Hachnosa? Keep in mind that with regard to 38 out of 39 malachas, the source is always going to be the Mishkan. The exception, the one exception to the rule, is going to be Hotzah. Hotzah, it's not enough to tell me that they did Hotzah in the Mishkan. We need a special pasuk to reveal to us that Hotzah is a malacha. And that's called a malacha grua. Malacha grua means this is an inferior quality malacha. Interesting. All 38 malachas are high quality, but one malacha is low quality. I'll give you a mashal. Let's say in the Mishkan they sneezed. So does that mean that sneezing is a malacha just because they sneezed in the Mishkan? What we're looking for is something that's significant that was done in the Mishkan. So in the case of Otsah, which is a malacha grua, there's nothing significant about relocating an object from place to place. You haven't really done any major profound changes here. There's nothing creative. You know, Rav Shmuel Shlomo Hirsch is famous for saying that God created the world with 39 categories of labor. We have to desist on Shabbos from creating. You know, today Shabbos is not a day for creation. But in the case of Hotzah, I'm not creating anything. I'm just relocating an object. So for that, I need a special pasuk to teach me that on Shabbos you're not allowed to take an object out of one rishus and relocate it in another rishus. So what is that pasuk? So interesting is that I always say that, you know, to learn Hotzah in Shabbos, you have to learn two different prakim in Shabbos. You have to learn this perek, which is the first perek, and you also have to fast forward to perek HaZorik, which I think, I'm trying to remember what number HaZorik is. I think it's number 8. I don't know. Take a look. You have a Gemara Shabbos. What number is perek HaZorik? I think it's even later than maybe it's number 11, whatever it is. So that's a Gemara Daf Tzadi Vav Amid Beis. What happens is that Moshe Rabbeinu initiates a fundraiser. What?
It's 11.
11, right? Right before our bonus is number 12, right?
Kol HaKavod.
Yeah, so now Moshe Rabbeinu initiates the, I would call it the most successful fundraising enterprise in Jewish history. I don't know if there was cause match, I don't know what it was, but it was an amazingly successful fundraising. And at the end, Moshe says, Vayitzav Moshe Vayaviru Kol B'machne. Moshe Rabbeinu sends out like a clarion call, and he says to the people, don't bring anything more. We got enough. Which is amazing. I never heard of such a fundraiser that we got enough. Now what happens? Moshe Rabbeinu is sitting in what's called the Machne Levia. The Machne Levia was an open area, had no mechitzos, and it was a place where Rav Mitzuyim Shah, where the people would come out of their tents and they would walk into this area, this very large, almost like a square, as we discussed before, which is called the Machne Levia. That's a Rishus HaRab. So Moshe Rabbeinu is telling the people, you know, you might ask the question, what's so terrible if they would offer contributions even if they weren't necessary? You know, we could always, you know, lock them up in a treasury just in case, you know, for a rainy day. But the answer is no. This case was a case on Shabbos, and Moshe Rabbeinu was telling them, you're not allowed to bring me contributions on Shabbos. Why? Because you're going to take it from your ohel, from your tent, which is Rishus HaYochid, and you're going to take it out to the Machne Levia, which is Rishus HaRab. Why did Moshe Rabbeinu say that it's absolutely forbidden? Because it would be a Meleches Hotzah. So we see that the Torah itself teaches us about the Meleches Hotzah. It's not enough to derive it from Mishkan, like the other 38, we need a pasuk. Now that's as far as Masechta Shabbos is concerned. We have another Masechta called Erevin, and the Gemara has a whole different pasuk, a whole different source in the Torah for the prohibition against Erevin, and that's in Parshas Beshalach. So you may remember that in Parshas Beshalach, the people were offered the opportunity to collect the man, and that was good for every day of the week except for Shabbos. When it came to Shabbos, they were enjoined from collecting the man. On Friday, they would collect a double portion. It's like for those who are doing Daf Yomi, on Friday after the two block, because you won't hear the shir on Shabbos. or you won't be able to listen to it online, whatever you do. So the man, it says, Al Yetze Ish Mimkomo B'Yom HaShabbos. In Parashas B'Shalach, it says that a person should not go out of his makom, meaning out of his private quarters, on the seventh day of Shabbos. What it means is that they used to collect the man in a receptacle. So everybody had his kli, and he would take his kli out to an open area, and there you collect the man. He can't do so because by on Shabbos, because by taking this receptacle and carrying it out from his oel to the Rishus HaRabim, he is violating Meleches Hotzot. And therefore the Torah says, Al Yetze Ish Mimkomo B'Yom HaShabbos. So we have now two different sources for the Iser Hotzah on Shabbos. One is in Mishkan, it's enough, don't bring me any gifts, we close shop. And the other is from Man in Parshas B'Shalach, don't take your utensils out to collect the man. He says that the Iser Achnosa, Mishus HaRabim, Mishus HaYochid, you might ask the following. In both of the cases that we discussed, with regard to Hotzah in the Torah, the people were enjoined from taking something out of their private domain. What about the opposite? To take something from the public domain, that's called Hachnosa, to bring it into the private domain.
Mm-hmm.
So that same sugya in Perek HaZorek, in the 11th Perek, addresses this question and says that we're going to derive the Iser Achnosa, taking an object from Rishus HaRabim and bringing it inside Rishus HaYochid, from a svara, from a piece of logic. And that is, the Gemara says, what difference make whether you're going in or you're going out? Meaning in both cases, you're relocating the object as far as the Rishus is concerned, from one Rishus to another, from Rishus HaRabim to Rishus HaYochid or vice versa. And therefore, the Torah didn't have to mention explicitly that there's an Iser Achnosa. We derive the Iser Achnosa from the Iser Hotzah. And that makes Achnosa into what's called a Tolda. As you know, every one of the Malachos of the 39, including Hotzah, has Toldos. Now again, we're going to have a long discussion about Toldos. But just to oversimplify it, a tolda is a derivative of the av. It's to a large extent very similar to the av, but it's a different, what we call tzuras hamaisa, slightly different pu'ula, an action. So the classic case would be zriya, melecha zorea. One would be when this is the av melech, is when you put the zera into the ground. And the tolda would be mashkizroim. There's already a zera seed that's been planted, and now you water it in such a way that you encourage its productivity. That's a tolda. In the case of Hotzah, the av is called Hotzah. When you take it out of the Rishus HaYochid, out into the Rishus HaRabim, and then there's Achnosa as a tolda when you take it from Rishus HaRabim into Rishus HaYochid. And these two, the Av and the Tolder, are illustrated by our mission at the beginning of Masechet Shabbos. The Ani picks up something in Rishus HaRabim and he stretches his arm out and gives it into the hand of the Baal Bayis. That's called Hachnosa. And the Ashir, the Baal Bayis, who's inside the Rishus HaYochid, picks up something, stretches his hand out, puts it into the hand of the Ani that's in Rishus HaRabim. That's called Hotzah. Now later on, we're going to talk about two other types or categories of Hotzah, both of which are toldos. One is called Zorek. So what he does is, instead of carrying the object, he throws the object. And the other is called Moshit. Moshit means, let's say I have a plank, and I'm standing in one Rishus, you're in another, and I stretch the plank out, and you receive it in your hand. And that's called a tolda. That's called Moshit. Also, in the Mishkan, they had Moshe, because what happened was, if there were two wagons and they had the krushim, you know, the boards of the Mishkan in the back one, right? So they would stretch out the plank or the board from one agola to the other agola. Each agola was 10 tfachim high, meaning it had the mechitzos of 10 tfachim, and it was dalet al dalet. So every agola had the status of Rishus HaYochid. So now he was moshit, he took it and he stretched it, and the guy in the next cabin, you know, the next wagon would receive it. So that was done in the Mishkan. That's called Heim Helu Krushim Mikarkal Agola. So if they took the krushim from the ground onto the wagon, that would be a case of achnosa, because the ground is Rishus HaRabim and the agola is Rishus HaYochid. And then it was moshit when they stretched their arm out from one agola to the other agola. Now the Rambam writes in his Pirush HaMishnayos that there are three fundamental rules that underlie our Mishnah. Now our Mishnah is based on three rules. The first one is that there are three parts to Meleches Hotzah, A, B, and C. And you're only chayav on a Doraisa level with a chiv misa b'mezid or a chiv shogeg chiv karban chatas b'shogeg if you have implemented all three parts, A plus B plus C. And this I wrote on the board over here if you want to take a look. There's something called Akira, right? That's number one. Okay, I thought I had this magic marker, but it doesn't matter. So this is number one, Akira. This is number two, which is Shini Rishus, meaning after I lifted it up, I brought it into a different Rishus. And number three is Hanoch, I have to put it down. So Rambam says, only if I was guilty of all three, right, we'll call it one, two, and three, only in that case do I bring a korban chatas, because then I did a what's called a hotzah gemura, malacha gemura, a total, complete malacha. Then he has the second principle that underlies our mission. A person began the malacha, excuse me, but somebody else completed the malacha. So let's say Reuven did the Akira and Shimon did the Hanocha. They're both potter because neither of them implemented a full-fledged malacha gemura, correct?
Right.
But they're both in violation of an Isur Drabbanon, which is called in the language of the Shas potter aval osur. Potter means they don't bring a chatos, but osur means they violated an Isur.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the second principle where both of them participated in the malacha. One did the akira and the other did hatzah, the hanach. Now we're up to the third principle. What happens if somebody puts down an object on a very precarious landing place? You follow what I mean? He puts it down, which is a hanocha, on a makom, on a place that's less than arba tfachim al arba tfachim. Or if somebody picks it up from a place that's less than arba tfachim al arba tfachim. In the first of the two cases, there was no hanocha. In the second case, there was no akira.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we're talking about one person here. There was no partnership. But he didn't do an akira from a makom dalet al dalet. He didn't do a hanocha on a makom dalet al dalet. In either of those two cases, the Rambam says he violates an iser derabbanon, but he's not in violation of a malacha doraisa, because the malacha doraisa of akira and hanocha requires a makom dalet al dalet. It's got to be four tefachim by four tefachim. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it flies away. You know, the wind is going to blow it away. It's not on a secure landing place. That's why I mentioned to you before that if you accidentally found yourself carrying and there's no Eruv, put it down on the top of a fire hydrant, which is less than dalet al dalet, and therefore that's not called a hanocha. However, there is one exception to this rule, and that's called yodo shel adam. Okay then? What we have here is a hand, right? There are physicians or surgeons who specialize just in the hand. They work for sports companies and so forth and so on. It's amazing how complicated the hand is. We don't realize the complications. But for our purposes, just to understand Malachas Otsah, the hand is something that tightens. You know, the fist, you get a grasp on something, a grip on something. My father-in-law may be well. He has this little thing, you know, that the two black with the thing, you know. So he challenges, he loves to challenge the soldiers when he comes to Israel. And he's a stand-up riot. I mean, the man is closer to 100 than to 90, than to 90. But Kanai Nahara, he can hold this thing for a minute, more than a minute, 2 minutes. And then he challenges the Chayalim. He likes to go to the Dead Sea, you know, where see a lot of soldiers there. And he challenges them. And he says he's going to give them $50 if they can hold it for a minute. And immediately after they start, he takes his yarmulke out, and because they have to hold a quarter or a coin. So he takes his yarmulke out, waiting for the coin to fall. I once saw a chayal who was able to do it once out of hundreds of times. It's a lot of fun because all the people gather around to watch it, so it becomes a public scene.
Thank God he should continue doing it.
Yeah, Mitzvah Shem. So, because he went to Siberia, I mean, he did a lot of heavy work in his life. What can I tell you? To make a long story short, a hanacha requires a makom dalet al dalet, four tefachim on four tefachim. Because you have a small area. Let's say, for example, this would be, all right, this is probably four tefachim, but let's say half of this area, right? A very skinny table, and let's say it's only two tefachim in width. So that would be potur. It's not called a hanacha. But if you put something down in someone's hand, the Gemara says, Chashuva kedalet al dalet. It's as if you put it in a place that's dalet al dalet. And that's why our Mishnah says that if the Ani stretches his arm out where he's holding something and he puts it into the hand of the Ashir, he's chayav. Because the hand of an Ashir, because it has the potential to grab onto something, that's called a makom dalet al dalet. Even though no one has a hand except Og Melech HaBash, and that's 4x4. All right. Now we're up to the Afike Yam, which you'll see here on the bottom left of your page. You have it? Mm-hmm. It should be here? Mm-hmm. Yeah, Afike Yam. Afike Yam lived about 100 and maybe 50 years ago or so. And he wants to know the following. In Meleches Hotzoh, we said that we need an Akira and a Hanoch. He's got to take it up and put it down.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not Chayav without putting it down. In a different rishus, obviously. What's the reason for that? He has two options, possibilities. Possibility number one, that the malacha itself, by definition, is akira, and then carrying it over into another rishus and hanacha. So the essential part of the malacha includes hanacha. Hanacha is an integral part of Hotzah.
Mm-hmm.
And he's only Chayav, he has only completed his Malacha when he puts it down in another Rishus. Oh, you'll see about five lines down. The other possibility is no. The Malacha of Hotzah is complete when he takes the object from one Rishus to another. Even before he puts it down in the second Rishus, the object is already in the airspace, so to speak, of the second Rishus. Mm-hmm. He already has there for Meleches Hotzah. However, as far as Chiyuv Misa is concerned, or Chatos in the case of Shogeg, the Torah says no, he's got to do Hanocha. That's a condition. It's an external condition. You know, certain things are essential. They define the object or the person or the action. And certain things are conditional.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, if I would say to you, I'm selling you this karka on the condition that you do somersaults in the air, right? So the somersaults in the air is not what effectuates the transition, the acquisition. The kinyan itself is when I give you the money or you give me the money. But there's an external condition. Hanacha is, according to the second definition here, an external condition. It's not the guf ha-malacha. It's not the essence of the malacha. He says, for example, we have an akira. An akira is, again, an absolute requirement for the chiyuv chatos in a case of meleches hotzah. But once again, we could ask, what is akira? Is akira essential to the malacha itself? There's no malacha of hotzah without akira. Or is akira tnai? That the Torah says you're only chayev for hotzah if there was an akira. And again, the akira has to be from a makom dalet al dalet. So the Afikiyam wants to claim that I have an answer to my question from the Tosfos later on in Perek HaZorik. I keep emphasizing that Perek HaZorik is the Hashlamah, it's the completion of this first eight blot of Masechta Shabbos. Tosfos says that there's a Malach of Hotzah even without Hanocha, because he took it from one rishus and he entered, and it entered into another rishus. But the pasuk, he says, is a miut. A miut means an exclusion that comes to reveal that without hanoch, he's not chayev. But again, he's not chayev because he's not chayev. He's missing a condition, but not because he hasn't achieved or implemented a hotzah. However, although that Tosus appears in Perek HaZorek, there seems to be another Tosus at the beginning of Masechta that seems to indicate the exact opposite. Tosus writes that the Gemara's Kasha about why both of them are potter in the case where there was an Ani and a Baal Bais that participated, this one did the Akira and this one did the Anocha. He says, Tosus says, why not apply the principle of Nases Malacha Beinayim? This is something that you might want to underline. Is the pen still floating around? You see that principle called Nases Melacha Mi Beinehem. That's a very, very important principle.
Mm-hmm.
Which means, like, let's say, for example, you're carrying something that's very heavy. Neither of us alone, it's only our combined power that we're able to carry it.
Right.
So that's called Nases Melacha Mi Beinehem. And Tosus thinks, again, this is very complicated, but sometimes, in certain scenarios, Nases Melacha Beinehem means that we can pinpoint one of the two people who did, you know, the mainstay of the Melacha, and he could be Chayav. So Tosus wants to know, why in the case of Oker and Meniach are they both Potter? Tosus says, after all, if the Ani picks it up in Rishus HaRabin, and the Baal HaBayis takes it out of the hands of the Oni and puts it down in the Rishus HaYochid, Tosfos says it's Nases HaMalacha MiBeinayim. The Malacha was achieved through the mutual partnership of both of them. And he wants to know, Tosfos says, Madua Ein HaRishon Mischayev. Right, so let's say the Oni picked it up in Rishus HaRabim, put his hand into Rishus HaYochid, and the Baal Bais takes it out of his hand. So there's a malach that was done by the two of them. But which of the two of them implemented the mainstay of the malach?
The heavy lifting.
Well, let's say it's not a heavy object. Let's say it's just an object that he's carrying in his hand.
Uh-huh.
So Tosfos says that it's the Ani who did most of the malach. Uh-huh. The Baal HaBayis did nothing more than the Hanocha, right? He just did the third part of the three parts, three segments of Hotzah. And since Nases HaMalacha MiBeinehem, and they both together did the Malacha, let's just point an accusing finger at the Mechayev, the one who did the Iker Malacha, who did the Malacha itself. The second guy, who in this case is the Baal HaBayis, all he did was the Hanocha. That's not really an essential part of the Malach. That's just like a gmar, you know, it's just a finito, as we would say. But it's not really an essential part of the Malach.
So the idea is that the handing over, but the one who was handed it, it's not a Malacha.
He did most of the Malach. And
exactly.
Since the Malach was done between the two of them, because the one who received did the Hanocha.
Are they both responsible then?
No, neither of them are responsible. Tosus doesn't understand why. Tosus, in his logic, thinks that the first guy should be chayav, meaning that the Akira is essential to the Malacha, and the Anocha is just a Tanai. So the Tanai could be fulfilled by the second guy, but the first fellow should be chayav because of this principle called Nases HaMalacha MiBeinehem. That when a Malacha is achieved through both of them, then we start analyzing who did the mainstay of the Malacha, the primary part of
the
Malacha.
The second one, his hand, he took it from the Rishus HaRabim into the Rishus HaYachim.
The first guy, the Oni, took it from Rishus HaRabim, put his hand into the Rishus HaYachim, and the Usher grabbed it out of his hand, and he did the Hanocha. So here's where the Afikiyam's discussion becomes very relevant, because remember, the Afikiyam was wondering, why do we need Hanocha? Right. Do we need Hanocha because it's essential to the Malacha, or it's just a Tanai? If it's only a condition, It's almost as if without the hanocha, the hotzah keeps going. You know, it's a gift that keeps giving. So you have to put some sort of end zone in it. You know, a termination, bookends. And it could be that the usher inside, he's going to put the bookend. He's going to stop the object in, you know, in flight, so to speak. I don't mean that literally, but from its moving locution or whatever you want to call it. But the one who really did the malacha was the one who picked up the object, the ani, and took it into the other rishus.
It's a little bit like the example you gave before. The person who has the plank.
And he passes it over?
Yeah.
Right, that's complicated because actually I'm guilty of confusing you, because why should Moshe be chayav since the other person received it? Which sounds like he did the hanocha. So that's complicated. For that we have to learn Perek HaZorik. That's not even going to come up here in this Perek, in A block. That's called Moshe. Okay. I only really mentioned it because it's a tolda. I wanted to give you a couple of examples like Zrika of a tolda.
I understand. Thank you.
So it's really exciting here that this chakira, this investigation of the Afike Yam, is very, very relevant. It's, you can sink your teeth into it.
Right.
Is it that without the Hanocha you're missing an essential part of Melech HaSotzah? Because Melech HaSotzah means to relocate the object without the Hanocha. Or no, the Hanocha is just a tnai. In Yiddish we say a zaitig tnai. It's an external
side thing.
It's on the side, but side, you know. It's chitzoni, it's external. And then Afkimina is where one of the two, in this case we gave the scenario of the Ani, he did everything except that last Hanocha. So if you're going to say the Hanocha is part of the essential Malacha, well, he's not Chayav. But if you're going to say it's only a Tanai, then maybe he could take advantage of the participation of some other person, in this case the Baal Bais inside the house, to fulfill that condition, you know, to sort of bring the Hotzah to a termination. It's just a matter of termination, otherwise the Hotzah keeps going. You know, if he doesn't put it down, then he hasn't really completed his Melecha Hotzah.
So he's not encouraging, he's basically ensuring it's concluded.
He's saying that the usher, insofar as he's playing a secondary role, he's only fulfilling this condition, but it's not an essential part of the malacha. It could be that now we can apply the principle of Nasei Samalacha Mibeinehem, and we can look at the person who did the main malacha, and the one who helped him fill the tanai, he's off the hook, but the first one will be Chayev. He's very much on the hook.
Right.
And you could say it the other way around, by the way. You could say that maybe the Akira is only a tanai. Right, but the real malacha is when you carry something from one rishus to the other and put it down. The relocation with the hanocha, that's the essential part of malacha. So the akir is just a, you know, it's a technicality, it's a requirement, because how are you going to relocate something unless you uproot it from its original place?
But what you told us before about 1, 2, and 3, very interesting. As a result, it makes it much more... less strict in its application, if that's the case. Though.
Right, and the more requirements that we have in any malacha, the more lenient we are to say that if you're missing any of those so if I have a list of 100 requirements from 1 to 100, that's in a sense a leniency, because I'm saying that unless you check off all 100 boxes, you're not going to be chayav. In the case of Otso, which is unusual, we have 3 different boxes that have to be checked off. But the Afike Yam wants to know, are they all on the same level? Is it A, B, and C, and they're all uniform? Or maybe no, maybe it's A and B and C is only, you know, a condition, or maybe it's B and C and A is only a condition, meaning Akira is only a condition, the Anocha is only a condition, and he wants to analyze this Akira from the perspective of the Sugya of what's called Shnayim Shasu, where two people together effectuate a Malacha. Is there one person who's doing the main thrust of the Malacha? And that's this whole discussion.
It's
here.
Beautiful, the detail on this. It's,
yeah, this is, and it's very relevant to a case of achi of chatas. You know, I'm not going to tell you how much a chatas costs. It's pretty expensive. There is something called a carbon olive viore. You know, there will let you off easy if you're poor. You know, you may have to bring a serious eighth of a solus. That's pretty cheap. But if you have to bring a goat, you know, that's a hefty sum. My brother works for the university here in science, and he says that they used to do experiments on rabbits. They can't afford rabbits anymore. They're too expensive. Mm-hmm. So they have to get much smaller animals. But can you imagine the cost of a goat? You know, it says in Chagadi you can get one for 2 zuzi, but the 2 zuzi is a lot of money. Right.
With inflation,
a ksuv is only 200 zuzi, and that can take you, that can support you for a full year, so 2 zuzi. But I think a goat today probably, I don't know what you pay for a goat today, it's probably 5,000 shekel or something. I don't know, maybe I'm exaggerating, but.
It's
a sheep.
It's a money producer. It's a money producer for sure.
Yeah, that's why I say the Beis Hamikdash is about to be built. You might as well go into this business and start buying up animals. But no bats, please.
God forbid.
That we don't want.
Who knows whether it wasn't? They're saying still, but they're not sure whether it wasn't a biological virus, whether it's not an arm.
Yeah, the whole thing is is a little bit fishy. But
this thing with Iran is very interesting. With
what's going on in Iran?
Apparently, many more people than they're saying, and a very hefty amount at the top echelon. And where does it start? In Qum, where the mullahs are.
Wow.
Quite interesting. It's, you know,
somebody's going to give a whole drush
on Purim.
On Purim.
Yeah.
I have to admit, I swallowed a little bit of a smile of satisfaction when I read the news about Iran. You know, let them have the brunt of this. Yeah. Anyway.
They hang someone every 8 hours in public in Tehran Square.
Really?
Tehran Square 4. Wow. Exactly. Unbelievable. I had a case actually. Where there was something very similar, and as a result, I was told by the Canadian authorities, I'm persona non grata in a few countries, especially Iran.
Yeah, okay. So you don't want to go travel? Well,
certainly
Iran.
Not.
Even if you want to visit Shushan,
I wouldn't want my plane to go over there. But unfortunately, I had to go over Iran. That was very. I had to go over Iran when I went to Afghanistan because I did the mediation for soldiers for post-traumatic stress syndrome.
Right. Mm. All right, let's just see if we can, you know, we have this photocopy, see if we can finish this up very quickly. He has here a paragraph that starts Madua. You have that?
Yeah.
Okay, now there's a number of different answers, at least I think 10, maybe even twice that amount, as to why the Mishnah begins this perek with Meleches Hotzah.
Mm.
You know, the 39 Meleches, why begin with Hotzah? In fact, one of the problems we're going to see is why not begin with Erev Shabbos, to go through sequences, certain Mishnayos and Masechta Shabbos that address what you're allowed or not allowed to do on Erev Shabbos. That would seem to be a good starting point.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, he jumps right into Shabbos and with Meleches Hotzah. So Tosus here at the very beginning of the Masechta quotes the Riva, one of the Bali HaTosus, who raises this question. Why is it that the Mishnah begins with Meleches Hotzah? And Tosfos seems to assume that the best place to start Masechta Shabbos would be with the Mishnah in Klal Gadol that has the exhaustive list of the 39 Melachos. He says that Hoya Hatana Lahaskel B'Seder Dinim Ha'oskin B'Erev Shabbos. Right, we're going to have a whole Mishnah later on. Are you allowed to take a cloth and soak it into dye, D-Y-E, on Erev Shabbos, such that it'll become dyed and colored on Shabbos? Or, for example, are you allowed to put a piece of meat that's raw on an open fire on Shabbos? I'm sorry, on Erev Shabbos, knowing that it's going to fry, it's going to roast on Shabbos. Okay, so there are many. Or, for example, when we get to Bamei Madlikin, we're going to talk about how to light Shabbos candles. That's also an Erev Shabbos.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is all part of the question. Fine, so the first answer is the revised answer. You'll see that as Aleph on your right column, on your left column. And he says the following, that there's something called Chavivole. Chaviva means, maybe you've even heard a girl's name, Chaviva. You know, it's somewhat a popular name, which means it's beloved. This malacha, it sounds pretty counterintuitive or paradoxical, is the most beloved of all malachas. And the reason for that is because, as you and I know, the Mishnah is Torah Shebal Peh. And Torah Shebal Peh is a conglomeration, is a constellation of different rules and legal regulations. This malach of Hotzah has more rules and more regulations than any of the other 38 malachas. And he gives a few examples. There's Hotzah, there's Achnosa, and then he talks about the Ashir and the Ani, and then he talks about Shnayim Shasu, if they did it together as a partnership. Then we talk about the Yadol Shel Adam, whether it's called Dalet Al Dalet, and what are the Rishuyos, etc. So many different principles. nuances that make up this Meleches Hotzotz Chavivale. You know, that's what he prefers. So he wants to start with a massive volume of Torah Shebal Peh, of oral traditions and regulations. Then he quotes Rabbeinu Tam, that's number Beis, right? You have number Beis? Mm-hmm.
Right.
And Rabbeinu Tam says that the reason why the Mishnah begins with Meleches Hotzah is because it's Matsui V'Ragil. Mm-hmm. You may find that in your...
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Matsui V'Ragil, it's something that's so common, mm-hmm. and it takes place almost on every single Shabbos. You have an issue about what you're allowed to carry, and from here and there, take it out and take it in. You know, not everyone is slaughtering animals on Shabbos. Not everyone is dyeing clothing on Shabbos. Not everyone is weaving clothing on Shabbos, etc., etc. But everyone is carrying on Shabbos. Mm-hmm. And therefore, it's so practical that we have to really know, you know, the laws of Hotzah, and it's so commonplace, therefore it's put first on the list of 39 Melachos. Then we're up to another answer quoted by Tosfos, that's number Gimel, also the name of Rabbeinu Tam, an alternative answer, the name of Rabbeinu Tam, mm-hmm. that the Tana really wants to begin with Erev Shabbos, and the first mission about Erev Shabbos is going to be the Chayat, the tailor. And the question is, if a chayat, if a tailor is allowed to take his needle out from his private, you know, weaving place or sewing place out into Rosh Hashanah, and it's still Erev Shabbos, it's before the sun sets, and the Mishnah is going to prohibit it. So in order to give us a background for that Mishnah, the Mishnah at the beginning of the Masechta has to organize the principles of Hotzah. And that brings us to Nomad Dalid, which is the Me'iri.
Right.
And he likes Hotzah first, because he says that many, or perhaps even most, of the principles of Shabbos will be clarified by Hotzah. So, for example, the Malach of Hotzah includes carrying, it includes throwing, it includes stretching your arm out, that was called Moshit, carrying four Amos and Rishos HaRamin. It's going to include concepts called the Yedias HaRishios, means he has to know and be aware that this is Rishos HaYochid, that's Rishos HaRamin. All these principles, he says, Rov in Yonei Shabbos Tluyim Ba. You know, most of the laws of Shabbos depend upon these principles that are going to be clarified here in Meleches Hotzah. Then in number 5, he quotes one of the Achronim called the Chefetz Hashem. Mm-hmm. And he explains that Tana begins with Meleches Hotzah, because although all other melachos are derived from the Mishkan, if you remember our discussion from before, from Meleches Hotzah, we cannot derive it from the Mishkan. We need it from the Torah b'mefurosh. If you can underline that, the next to the last line in that paragraph. Me'at Torah b'mefurosh. It's got to be explicit in the Torah. And that makes Hotzah something very unique. That it's something which the Torah itself prohibits, which is not so for the other melachos. That's all derived from Mishkan. He quotes a second answer in the name of the same Chefetz Hashem, who says that the Tana begins with Hotzah because Hotzah has Avos and Toldos Yachad. What does he mean by Yachad? And he says that Bechlal Hotzah Asura Lakar Mishus Achas Lanir Mishus Acheres Asur Rabbanan Gam Akira Vanocha Lechud Lachain Adif Hatana Lakdima. The Tana wanted to start with Hotzah because Hotzah, number one, has Avos and Toldos together, and number two, it has also Doraisas and Darabonos. So there's Akira, and then there's Hanocha, and if you have one without the other, you violate an Issa Darabonon. And then he has a Gurarye, with this we'll call it a Shia, because it goes on and on and on. The Gurarye says that the reason why our Mishnah began with Hotzah is because Ein Iser Hotzah Yadu Hashim Malach, and many people are unaware of the fact that there is an Iser Hotzah. I can just tell you that I've seen this in Europe all the time, even amongst Orthodox Jews. They're carrying things and they're not aware of the malacha. And not only that, since on Yontif we're allowed to carry, they make the confusion. They think, well, if on Yontif we're allowed to carry, so then on Shabbos we're also allowed to carry. Israelis in Europe, they make the mistake that since there's an Erev here, they think that in Barcelona there's an Erev. But there ain't no Erev in Barcelona, at least last time I was in Barcelona. There's no Erev in Madrid. And you'll see Israelis carrying their talis to shul on Shabbos in Spain and in many, many other countries where there's no Erev. And if you go to England, for example, you have no problem. I think almost every Jewish neighborhood has an Erev in England. But you're talking about other countries, and you know, you're talking about Holland, and the list goes on and on. So the Mishnah wanted to begin with Hotzah because this was the most ignorant. The ignorance was very high quality in high volume ignorance in the case of Meleches Hotzah. Because people just simply don't pay attention to Meleches Hotzah. Okay, then. So if you could make a note of it that we got up to number Ches, so maybe we'll decide tomorrow whether we want to finish this up or not.
Right.
And that's good. Okay, then. So we covered a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.